Joining me in the KRVS studios is Stephen Landry. He is the artistic director for the Acadiana Repertory Theatre Company, here to talk about their upcoming production called The Seabirds by William Oram. It opens on March 7th and runs through the 15th. And so you're opening right after Mardi Gras. Could you have found a less busy time?
I scheduled it when the theater was available.
Yes.
And crossed my fingers that people would be looking for something quiet to do the weekend after Mardi Gras.
Well, it is Lent. You know, they are supposed to be kind of calming down and settling.
And there are some religious overtones to this show, so it might work for them.
All right. So it's going to be at Theater 810.
Yes.
And that is a smaller venue.
About 50 seats. Perfect for – Theater 810 is really perfect for the vast majority of what we do, which has been really great. But this – this takes place in the watchroom of a lighthouse. There's not much room. So we hope that the audience really feels – sort of the cramped nature of what we're trying to get across.
That lighthouse. It's called The Seabirds, and it's by William Oram. Would we know anything else that William Oram has written?
Well, he's the senior writer in residence at Emerson College in Boston. This is I don't know if it's his first play, but it's the first one that I've seen that has had production.
Which is part of your mission, isn't it?
Yes.
Acadiana Repertory Theater.
Mm-hmm. And we have even solidified that mission more in the last couple productions. Our last show, In the Bones, by Cody Daigle, sort of cemented for me, because he wrote it for us. Ink was, still wet when we first started rehearsal. And it solidified for me that this is who we are. This is really who we are. So I was looking at a website of Argos Theater up in Boston to get just some information on another playwright. And this show popped up, and I saw what it was about, and this is fascinating. Let me just email him, and here we are.
Mm-hmm. So, before we talk about the story of The Seabirds and this, why it really attracted you, let's go back just a moment to that solidified your sense of your mission of what Acadiana Repertory Theatre does. What is it about performing new plays, young authors? What is it about that really attracts you and the theater company?
The creative process of either originating roles, originating a production, or coming in with a regional premiere, that in and of itself is a thrill. But to give playwrights an opportunity to have their work produced, in its infancy, is really something that has, for me, as I have become friends with more and more playwrights, become very passionate about. And the access that we have to these playwrights is absolutely phenomenal. William and I emailed him. I said, I would like some character clarification. And he said, well, good, call me on Monday. And we talked for an hour and just talked about the show. So it's this unfettered access that we have to playwrights. And they are so passionate and so thankful, just as you normally are to them for such great work. It's humbling.
Yeah. Not something you can really do with Sam Shepard, huh?
No,
just email him.
Neil Simon's no longer taking my calls. it's a great thrill. And to see a playwright like Cody or like Benjo Levette, who wrote Carol for us a couple years back, we're producing one of his works, to see them grow and flourish and know that maybe in some way you had a small part, just like they've had a huge part in helping us to grow in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So, it's great. It's
fun. You're giving life to art.
Absolutely.
Making it three-dimensional.
Absolutely.
Bringing it off the page.
Yeah.
So you encountered this play, The Seabirds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was it a synopsis that you read first?
It was like a quote.
Just a quote.
And it was one of the reviews of the world premiere at Argos in Massachusetts that said something to the effect of, it was nice to see a new play that didn't take place in a yuppie living room that was filled with nothing but caustic one-liners. Because that seems to be a lot of what's coming out right now. It's all – and they're – not that they're bad, but they're all kind of the same. Mm-hmm. This is 1863 in a lighthouse at the height of the Civil War. That's different.
Historical drama isn't really something that you see a lot of.
Not at all. Not at all. And then, I emailed him. He sent the script over. And I read it and realized the layers and layers and layers of stuff that he is talking about. It could be in the Civil War. It could be before or after. But it's just – it's a very interesting play that has a lot of twists and turns that you don't find in a lot of what's coming out today.
Did he say why he wrote about the past?
He seems to – well, I just purchased his novel. So if he's listening to this, that new novel purchase was for me.
And we're more familiar with it in novels, of course. A lot of people write historical fiction.
Yeah.
But historical drama
– and you know, when you read it, it reads like a novel, the play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I think that that just might be where he is. Mm-hmm. You know, I've found that working with playwrights recently, they certainly are at a place. And it's – you kind of ride with it. And this show – he obviously has thought a lot about it. He's from that. It's very much a New England show.
Mm-hmm.
But he was fascinated when we contacted him to see how a show taking place in 1863 during the Civil War would play south of the Mason-Dixon. So it's an interesting that the world premiere was in the north and the regional premiere. Well, the second show will be down here.
Very, very far south.
Yeah.
So you encountered it from a quote, but then at some point you must have read the play.
I did. I emailed him just to ask for a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about a 2-day process, and then it just skyrocketed from there.
It really resonated with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what is the story? You mentioned there are
two men
in a lighthouse.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And without giving, because there's a lot of twists and turns, but Rudy Eisenshoff, who I'm thrilled to work with. I've been admiring his work for a long time and very excited to work with him. And Jason Petitjean, who we worked with for In the Bones. You know, just two guys that are generous and willing to give. And they're playing some characters that have so much to them. Laban Shadfield, who Rudy plays, is the keeper of this lighthouse. And he goes about his day by himself, going through his routine, going through his ritual. The lighthouse is at the mouth of the Chesapeake. So he's in Union territory. And he's going about his business, doing his thing, when he sees through the windows of the lighthouse someone washed on shore. And he goes and recovers Mickey Leonce. Mickey is a late 20s Irish immigrant who we find out later had been conscripted to serve in the Confederate Navy, much to his chagrin. So it's not so much about a North versus South, but it's about what these two men bring. Mickey's injured and can't leave this lighthouse. So it's two men stuck in this place for a week from two totally different backgrounds, and the secrets and the emotions that come out of that and grow out of that. And there's some twists and turns that it takes a lot to surprise me in theater nowadays after having read so much. But at the end of the show, my jaw was on the floor. So yeah. But it's fascinating, and it's fascinating even more so to see two guys play such strong characters and not have any trouble doing it. Just to watch their journey, they just dug in their heels and have made them their own, and I haven't had to do much work. Yeah.
Well, they're both very skilled actors, and as you mentioned earlier, Jason Petitjean is also in improv theater.
Yes,
so he's really quick on his feet with emotions and words, and Rudy has been in so many plays and so many different roles.
And they've worked, you know, obviously Jason has had to take on an Irish accent. I, as a director, I tend to shy away from accents. They scare the devil out of me just because if you
can't – someone in the audience will be from Ireland.
Exactly. And usually if it's a show where I can say, look, don't do the accent.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's boyos written into the text, and part of it is that he's Irish. There's only two guys in the show. I can't just say leave that out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jason not only has embraced it, he has watched videos. He has done everything he had to do. They have just done this research. And Rudy asked me early on, do you mind if I do research? Do you mind if I send? Mind? You know, this is what it's about.
Dream actors.
Yeah, this is what it's about. Mm-hmm. This is what, you know, one of the many reasons that I stuck around to do theater here was because we have people like Rudy and Jason and all the actors that I work with that are generous, trying to make this craft something happening here in Lafayette.
Yeah. And having so many interesting options, so many different theater companies, all with different missions, but yet the same mission to make great theater
in
our community. If you are just tuning in, my guest is Stephen Landry, the artistic director of the Acadiana Repertory Theater Company, here to talk about their latest production. It's called The Seabirds, and he is directing the play by William Oram. It is the regional premiere of that play. It even though you say you haven't had to do much mm-hmm. and they've sort of taken off doing research and learning the accents, that must be a challenge to direct two people because you can't mask anything by a lot of walking around and choreography and people coming in and distracting the audience. Everything is right there.
Yes. And the the set itself is next to nothing. We have a young lady designing our set named Courtney Thompson. She's from Baton Rouge. And my initial set design was totally opposite of what the original production is. Mine is very sparse and very abstract. So there's nowhere to hide for the guys, and there's not much movement. One of them is crippled for 3/4 of the play. The other sort of just goes about his routine. The focus is on what are they saying, what's the interplay, what are the secrets, how are they coming out, rather than creatively staging something. And I think that, you know, real life doesn't look creatively staged. They laughed at me during In the Bones, my cast, because I was all concerned, oh, we need more movement. And finally somebody said, do you get up and walk around a room when you're watching TV for no reason?
Right. Flailing your arms.
Yeah, my wife says I might. But no, they don't. And so it's about accepting the fact that just because it's the theater doesn't mean it needs to look like the circus. Yeah, there's nowhere to hide for these guys. And it's been – a lot of our rehearsal has been us sitting at my house – reading the show over and over again to find these little clues that William has left as to the real identities of these guys and what's really making them tick. So that's been totally different for me, which has been a thrill.
And what do you think of the language of the play? Because that's extremely important if there are just two people and it is the conversation between them.
It's different enough. I mean, you know, it's 1863. So it's mostly the same, but there's just enough differences that it's been difficult, I think, as with our show The Oath last year, which was 1920s. You find they'll say a line, they're trying to get off book, and I'm like, yeah, that's not it. I know that's how you'd say it right now, but that's not what it is in 1863. So the language has been – it's very grandiose on the part of Shadfield, on the part of Leonce, the immigrant. It's very crass and very much, you know, I mean, the Irish in 1863 were not exactly the affluent group in Boston and parts.
Well, especially the ones who had come over and were looking for
work. And that's where Mickey comes from. His you know, he talks about that. His dad came over in 1847, and then the rest of them came over in 1848. And he's a planter. Mm-hmm. His sisters live in Boston, but he moved south to plant. Mm-hmm. Thus, he got conscripted to Jeff Davis's Navy. So,
so that's interesting. He wasn't conscripted right when he got off the boat.
No.
Which happened to many of the immigrants.
He avoided it. And what, you know, one thing you see, and this is not giving anything away because we see it in the first scene, he has a giant D branded on his hip because he was a deserter. He didn't want to fight in the war. So the cavalry came and got him and put him on a ship. And you know, there he was stuck at sea, which was, once he describes it, probably 10 times worse than had he just sucked it up. And stayed on land.
Well, I see what you mean. Like, there's something sort of novel-like about this too, because it sounds like William Orem did his research and really delved into what might have happened to these people at that time, how they might have acted, how they might have been, you know, their lives might have been taken away from them.
Yeah. And it's both of these actors, both of these characters rather, have had something taken away from them in circumstances that were beyond their control. And so to see it, it's, you know, people say they're concerned about me because I always pick these depressing shows. But what speaks to me about these shows is how real all of these characters from these playwrights have been, that there's a sense of longing and there's a sense of loss that really our audiences go, yeah, I get that. I've been through something similar. And I'd much rather an audience walk out feeling changed or having something to talk about, then I want them to be entertained. Don't get me wrong. And comedies are great. We have a couple coming up this season, though they're dark and well. but you know, I want my audience to walk away going, okay, you know, that was something that I can identify with. And that's something I'm going to think about for the next couple weeks until we can go see something else that ART or AUI or something at Cité or Wanderlust or whoever many of these great theater companies are doing. So,
well, knowing your attention to detail and your passion for directing and theater and knowing the two actors who you've cast in these roles, I think people will have that experience.
I hope.
Just really, as you're expressing, you really can't say enough about the talent of these two actors.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Rudy and Jason. Again, if you are listening, we're talking about the Seabirds, regional premiere of this play by William Oram. The Acadiana Repertory Theater will open it on March 7th. It will run at Theater 810 for two weekends. How many showings?
Six. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the first weekend, then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the second weekend. I'm famous for not liking to close on Sundays because I find it anticlimactic. I like to walk out into the night.
A Saturday night at midnight.
Something about 4 p.m. on a Sunday that just I find. So, yeah,
you
we'll
walk
close
into the sunlight.
Yeah, yeah. We're actors. We like to go down the
go
dark alley.
And get right. Fade into that twilight. Mm. So how should people get tickets for this? And they really should get them ahead of time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we like to – we hope that every show is a sellout, but, you know, you don't want to take a chance with only 50. And I say 50 seats, it's really like 45, 46. Mm-hmm. So you can always visit our website, acadianarep.org. The link for to purchase tickets should be up tonight or tomorrow. Theater 810 was working on the link. You can call Theater 810, and that's 484-0172. Good for me. 484-0172. Walter or Marie will take care of you. Or you can take the chance and show up on the night of, but I don't recommend it.
Might be disappointed.
Yeah, might be disappointed. Yeah.
Might not be any more seats left. Well, in your conversations with William Oram, the playwright, aside from just asking particular questions about a character, did he have anything else to say, guidance, kind of?
You can tell he works at a university. I asked him a question about the spiritual and religious nature of Shadfield, because at least what he presents is that he's a very religious man. He knows a lot of scripture by heart. Everything he does is sort of ritualistic and follows a sort of liturgy of his day. And so I asked William, I said, you know, is that real, or is that just something that's become part of his routine? And he comes back with, well, I know the answer to that. What do you think it is? Luckily he said my answer was good, but it was a wonderful conversation. And I got off the phone just wanting to fly through the roof because I was so excited. But his whole thing was, everything is there in the text, you know, but it's about uncovering those layers. And but the most important thing is that he's been available. You know, we needed a clarification the other night. We were sitting at rehearsal. I sent him a quick email. 30 minutes later, he came back with a very detailed explanation. And it was always, anything else you need, call me. Send me an email, whatever you need. He's upset he was supposed to be able to come down but he just wasn't able to with his schedule. But he has just been generous. All of our playwrights have been. They've just been generous and thankful that we're producing and curious what could be going down in a small city smack dab in the middle of Louisiana. What's going down there that these theaters are approaching us? And that's been a thrill to introduce Lafayette and its culture to playwrights. Ben Jolivet keeps saying, I need to get down there.
Especially with the name Jolivet.
Yeah, I know. And he's in, I think, Rhode Island now. And he's so fascinated with Lafayette, like anybody is, that hears about us. And so William has just been, again, generous and giving. And that's the greatest gift that they can give us besides the actual work.
Yeah. Have you ever had discussions? And again, like you said, you're actors, and you kind of like to go off with this theatrical flourish. But do you ever have discussions after any of your plays? Because as you said, many of them are quite evocative, provocative, and multi-layered.
We haven't thus far, and had William been able to come down, that was my plan for opening night, was to have a talkback session. We are always, however, willing to continue the conversation. Mm-hmm. And so for our audience, potential audience that's listening, stop us. Mm-hmm. Talk to us. You know, sometimes it's hard to schedule a talkback because people may not stay, and then you have like one person and you're sitting there. Yeah. Right. But I encourage our audiences, stop us, talk to us, you know, ask us what we think. And it might not be what the playwright thinks, mm-hmm. but it's what we've interpreted it as. A lot of our shows tend to be, you know, a little bit thought provoking, mm-hmm. and as they should be. And there's been some stuff, you know, In the Bones was such a unique experience. We made a last minute, after I spoke with y'all, we made a last minute decision to not have a curtain call. We rolled credits because there was a video element to the show. And so the show ended and credits came up, and then the lights came on, and the audience, we had nights where the audience didn't move. They didn't know what to do. They were stunned. They were, you know, and so they stayed, and we entered into conversation with them. And that's something that we hope to continue. We feel like we're approachable. We want to be. We're Lafayette. We're Acadiana's Theater. We're not mm-hmm. doing this for ourselves. This is not something one just does for oneself to pay the bills or to just have fun. It's too much of a stressful and expensive habit to just have fun. You're doing it for somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's our audiences. So. Mm.
Well, you're doing a great job of it.
Thank you.
And if you continue having those kinds of little endings, you might have people just staying there for every performance. So The Seabirds by William Oram, again, a regional premiere. My guest, Stephen Landry, is the director. He's also the artistic director of the Acadiana Repertory Theater. And what do you all have coming up next? Just to kind of
So we have in May, we're bringing back our New Works Festival. It's been since 12, so we took a year off. So that'll be in May. Not sure where and exactly when. We're looking for a suitable place to host it. It won't be at Theater 810. They're thankfully booked up, which we're thrilled that they are so busy that they can keep that open, and we're happy to do the little that we can to help them out. In July, we have the world premiere of Cody Daigle's The Survivalists. It's a show that he's been toying around with, and I said, I want a show. And he said, well, let me give you a show. And he's finishing it up right now. Debbie Ardoin, who's been in a number of our shows, will be directing. I'm going to be in it. That's exciting. I haven't been on stage much because I've been directing. So that's in July. It's a dark comedy. And then in September, Ben Jolivet, his show Fragile Thing Cracks, that will be the regional premiere of Fragile Thing. It's another dark comedy, but it's really it's sort of fantastical and bizarre in the best possible way. The potential for it, though it's still in development, for a musical adaptation of a beloved children's story in a collaboration with the Delta Grand is in November. I won't reveal that just yet. And then finally, Chelsea Mercantile, who wrote one of our shows for last season, she is doing our Carol this year. And it's Carol the Five Chimes is the theme. It's focusing on the spirits with an extra ghost in there that she's going to be adding. So
continuing your variations on Carol.
Busy year. Mm-hmm. Busy, busy year.
Well, we'll look forward to having you and other members of the Acadiana Rep back here to talk about
Thank
it
you.
Here at KRBS.
Thank
if you would like to see The Seabirds by William Oram, again directed by my guest Stephen Landry, get tickets through Theater 810. Mm-hmm. It will open on March 7th and run through the 15th. You can stop by the Acadiana Rep's website or call Theater 810.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Stephen.
Thank you, Judith.